The Major Spoilers podcast covers news, reviews, and of course, spoilers, and goes into details about the topics discussed. So if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items we talk about, you might want to come back later.
I'm Matthew.
I'm Rodrigo.
And I'm Steven, and you're listening to the Major Spoilers podcast, the podcast for pop culture and comic fans just like you.
In this issue, a lost bit of comic book history returns just in time for tax day. The Inhumans are in the house. Little Dark is down with the sickness. Nancy Drew and the Hardy Boys may be cool once again. And Steven starts a taco battle that will probably be the end of us all. Pick your sides. Get the fire sauce and some guacamole for Matthew. But hold the sour cream, because the Major Spoilers podcast is on the air.
Welcome to issue 724 of the Major Spoilers podcast. Thank you so much for downloading and listening and giving us all those five-star reviews over on iTunes. It certainly helps us out. And the more you can spread the good word about Major Spoilers.
Yes?
Hello, sir. Have you heard the good word about Major Spoilers? That's exactly what you need to do.
Do we have to wear ties?
Yes, and backpacks.
I hate ties.
That's okay. You'll look cute.
A tie is just a noose, man.
You will look cute.
A noose, man.
You will look cute.
That corporate noose around my neck, man. I don't want to be part of that, man.
Let us get to some news and spin that wheel of destiny, and maybe Matthew's necktie will get caught up in that. So we got three items this week. We have Thor, the Ragnarok trailer, the teaser trailer has been released. Amazing Spider-Man number 25.
It's a trailer?
So we talk about this. Amazing Spider-Man number 25 is a million-dollar book, and the new Warriors is headed to Freeform. Let's spin that wheel of destiny. Let's see where it lands. There it goes, right there on the new Warriors are headed to Freeform. Now, first of all, for the millions of you that are saying, what the hell is a Freeform? You may know it previously as the Family Channel, and before that, the ABC Family Channel. And then before that, Christian Broadcast Network channel.
Yeah, back in the 70s, it was all a man with big hair talking like this and telling us that we're going to HE double hockey sticks, Steven.
Bill Clinton was on CBN?
Bill Clinton has a deeper... Hi, I'm Bill Clinton.
You're talking like Jerry Falwell. Oh, that's your Jerry Falwell impression. I get you. Okay, excellent. Okay, gotcha. So New Warriors,
so
headed to Freeform, and not as a pilot, not as a... not as a single episode. In fact, the ABC-owned network has said, yeah, give us an entire series, an entire season of the new Warriors featuring Squirrel Girl. She kicks butts and eats nuts.
Nice.
This is kind of interesting because this is the second series that ABC or that Freeform has said, yes, give us an entire season of. The other one is Cloak and Dagger, which I don't remember if that's a 30-minute or an hour-long show. But we've got two Marvel series headed to an ABC network. And in the case of the New Warriors, it's going to be a comedy.
Makes sense. The New Warriors really does apply itself to that approach.
Good news, bad news. I mean, I know that Freeform, ABC Family has been kind of in a we need to find our people's kind of situation for the last 30 years.
They're still looking for their demographic.
Yeah, they really are, but
ABC,
I think they're now.
ABC Family was sitting pretty for a while as the like rerun network for ABC shows,
right?
Just like your Full House or whatever was on. Was that Full House on ABC?
Yes.
No.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think this is good news for two reasons. One, you may remember about 10 years ago when Marvel Editorial decided that the New Warriors were stupid joke characters that needed to be the butt of jokes and the central premise of the Civil War as how much they suck. So as a fan of the original New Warriors series, up until the point that Evan Skolnick started writing it, I think it's good because whether this is classic New Warriors or not, it should give them that Guardians of the Galaxy bump, theoretically, if it catches on with the audience, to where we'll probably see more New Warriors in comics, which I'm always down for. And Squirrel Girl is emblematic of, I don't want to say new Marvel, but modern Marvel, in that they're willing to experiment with things that aren't Wolverine as long as they're a little bit Deadpool. And I'm kind of fine with that. I'm just wanting to know if she's going to be in the New Warriors or leading the New Warriors, who are the rest of her Warriors?
Could we be seeing Nova and
Well, the original Teen New Hulk. Warriors were Nova, Night Thrasher, Firestar, Marvel Boy, Namorita, and Speedball.
Mm. I forget who they are in the
live-action Speedball.
In the animated series, I believe it's Spider-Man and the New Warriors, am I not mistaken? And so you would have a Miles Morales running around there, but I don't think we're going to see that in a live-action TV show.
I think that's the Web Warriors.
Oh, that's what it is. But I'm pretty sure that she's in that as well. That Squirrel Girl is in there. In fact, this whole thing about the whole announcement about New Warriors isn't really about who the other members of the team are. It is about, this is Squirrel Girl, and she leads this team, and here's what's great about Squirrel Girl. So this is like the Squirrel Girl half-hour comedy show.
Well, there are a lot of options for Marvel characters that I'd love to see live, and while I don't think it's the perfect place to bring us like a Kamala Khan, Ms. Marvel, or a new Nova,
why not?
It might be an interesting place to. Well, I'd rather see Kamala Khan in a solo adventure.
Yeah, like. Like Kamala Khan can carry a movie, like an actual like feature length movie.
Yeah, but on the other hand, we've never seen a live action, you know, Ms. Marvel. We've never seen a live action Nova, even if they go with something like Night Thrasher, for the love of God. There are a lot of things you can do with some of those street level New Warriors people that would be really interesting and could be really fun.
Doing Nova would allow them to tie it to Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And there's a thousand ways of explaining why none of those guys had superpowers, but this Nova does, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, the interesting thing is this will come out in 2018. I mean, they've ordered it direct to series, so it's going to come out pretty quick. And I don't know if this will be by the fall of 2018 or if they're looking for this and Cloak and Dagger to take a winter approach. But that's, you know, that's kind of interesting if they get it into either one of those time slots, because it will come right on the heels of Guardians of the Galaxy, essentially within a year of that. So that's, you know, kind of a good thing. What amazes me is that as I was looking at all of the quote unquote Marvel live action shows that are on television, there's actually a lot of them, more so than people think. I mean, you've got the Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, Iron Fist, Defenders, and Punisher over there on Netflix. You've got Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Inhumans over on ABC. You've got Legion on FX. You've got Runaways, which is in production over at Fox. Cloak and Dagger and the New Warriors going on at Freeform. And so that's a lot of shows. And we think that DC is the company that's dominating the small screen with their shows, but they're puny compared to what Marvel Studios is doing on the small screen as well.
Yeah, but I would say that the worst of the DC shows is probably better than the worst of the Marvel shows, even though there's more Marvel, which honestly for a lot of years has been true of their comic output as well. So it really depends on how you balance your particular metaphorical scales. But I was surprised when you threw me the list of like 19 things that Marvel has on TV. That's weird.
Yeah, and there's a couple of others I've probably forgotten that doesn't include the myriad of Disney XD shows that are on, like Guardians of the Galaxy, Spider-Man, Web Warriors, you know, whatever else, Hulk and the Hulkaneers, whatever else that they have going
Agents
on.
Agents of Smash.
Oh, that's what it is. I like it as Hulk and the Hulkaneers. I think that just rings
a lot better. Yeah, I like that better.
The Hulkaneers are here. And, but the thing about Freeform, though, is I'm not saying that I've watched things on Freeform, and certainly not like Pretty Little Liars or anything, but Freeform doesn't have the standard, you know, we start in October and end in May.
Right,
it always feels more like a, hey, I've got a couple of new episodes. Let's air them.
Well, Freeform kind of is Freeform, I think, is hitting the tween demographic, I think, is who they are trying to hit most, which may give you an indication of where the show is going. Although, you know, they have ABC Family has done some very interesting programs over the years that were original content. My biggest fear is the first time you say Freeform, you've got a million people going, what the heck is a Freeform?
What's a Freeform?
Which automatically makes me think that it's going to be really hard for people to find this network when it goes on, even though you can tell them, well, do you remember where ABC Family is? Oh, yeah. And then, well, there
Channel
it is.
49, dude.
But, you know,
it doesn't matter because tweens are going to watch it on Hulu anyway.
Maybe.
That's true.
That may be where it goes. I'm trying to figure out. They only became Freeform in 2016.
Yeah.
But I was trying to find out who their main demographic. Oh, yeah. It was also Fox Family before ABC bought it. Socially and conservative. I don't see anything that lists their main demographic right now, but I'm pretty sure it's tweens.
I would agree because they do the 13 days of Halloween with all the Disney-like movies, mm-hmm. and they do the 25 days of Christmas, where they're the ones that air My Rudolph Shiny New Year every year.
Oh, do they? As opposed to being able to watch it on demand years. Anytime you want?
Okay. We don't do that here. You know, people are like, why don't you watch the Charlie Brown Thanksgiving anytime you want off a DVD? Well, because then it's not the Charlie Brown Thanksgiving. It's some crap off a DVD. That's not how the universe works.
Well, but
it
and
shows
that's kind of
once a year. And if you miss it, you die.
Well, and that's one of the bad things. I mean, on the one hand, it's great that we can go to a digital format and get all of these great shows when we want them and watch them when we want. And we can sit through the horrible Iron Fist all in one sitting or stretch it out to 45 weeks if we want to. But back in the day,
felt like 45 weeks for that first episode,
back in the day, Matthew's right. We had to wait for that CBS special sound and we had to run to the TV and if you had to, go to the bathroom, you held it until commercial break. And by God, you better be done in 1 minute, to get back or you're going to miss the next, thing of Rudolph's Shiny New Year. So be on the lookout, I guess, for The New Warriors when it arrives on Freeform. Check your cable listings for showtimes when that comes out.
They also have a web app, Watch Freeform. I'm not saying I know this because of Pretty Little Liars or anything. I'm just saying it exists.
Well, that's one look at the news this week. You can head over to MajorSpoilers.com and check out news stories, reviews, previews, everything that you can want at MajorSpoilers.com. And if you're a Patreon member and you want to hear us talk about Thor Ragnarok, head over to Patreon.com/MajorSpoilers. Sign up and get some bonus content. It could be bonus podcast episodes from Major Spoilers or Critical Hit or character sheets or original art or T-shirts or so much that you can grab just by becoming a patron at patreon.com/MajorSpoilers. Oh, look. Hey, look, everyone. Ashley has joined us.
Yay, oh, no. Ashley.
Ashley, how are you? Or more importantly,
I'm super tired.
How's
are
LA?
You?
How's LA traffic?
It's a wonder among wonders, but it's okay because
I wonder how you get through it.
I'm finally leaving the continental U.S. in 2 weeks, so I don't care.
Where are you going?
I'm going to Hawaii.
Ooh, fancy times.
Yeah, a year later, pretty much, I can finally leave and the U.S. doesn't think I'm not a real person, so.
Oh, well, just give them time.
So sorry to be late.
No, that's okay. Do you have a review for us this week?
I totally do. I actually just shoved it into our shared show notes.
Oh, okay. There you go. So, go for it.
So this week I read Motor Crush #5, written by Brendan Fletcher and Cameron Stewart with art by Babs Tarr. I've reviewed a couple of the other issues from the first arc on the MSP before, and this is the end of that first arc, and it does not disappoint. So recently, Motor Crush revealed that in their, Speed Racer, in their Speed Racer style, they have their very own Racer X who has been plaguing Domino, and that all comes to a head in this final issue. The coolest thing about it is not even that it is the penultimate race between these two characters that we've seen, and we've seen their rivalry growing for a couple issues now, but the issue opens where we learn Domino's true origin and how she became to be the daughter of her father and how they came to live in Nova Honda and become of this new part of this new racing culture. And it might have to do with a glowy thing from space. And the end of the issue might reveal that she has superpowers. So really, it's not even just Speed Racer. It's Speed Racer meets The Flash.
Cool.
Yes. It also puts a really nice lid on Domino's relationship with Lola, her ex-girlfriend, maybe new girlfriend. And it seems like we're moving more and more towards the new girlfriend stuff. So I think this issue does an excellent job at tying up a lot of the loose ends of the threads that we've been fed, I guess is the verb I want, that we've been fed along the journey of this first arc while opening up a bigger part of the universe and a more, you know, cosmic level threat like you want in your future racing type story, which should make for a very exciting second arc. I can't wait for it to come back. And it's a bummer that per the Image Comics model, it's going to take a minute to come back. But we have the trade to look forward to. So there's that. This, I still maintain that this is the best thing Babstar has ever drawn. Her style really, I think, has come a long way since the first issue of Batgirl, and it's completely beautiful on the page here. The coloring is freaking out of this world, and it's just comic book candy for the eyes. I want them to make action figures. I want them to make t-shirts. And in particular, the scene where Domino is engaged in her, well, it's supposed to be the ultimate race, but it secretly doesn't wind up being that because there's going to be more issues in the future. And then how they draw her ascending to super speed is really cool. And it is very like 1980s Tron video game aesthetic, but in this pseudo alternate Nova Honda future. So I liked everything about it. I was very fortunate to get to read it early. If you are interested in Motor Crush, please go pick it up from your LCS. Supporting the floppies, the individual issues of independent comics is so important. And if you want to see volume 2 like I do, go pick it up. Don't be like me and read a review copy. So I'm going to give it 4.5 out of 5 slices of the meatloaf. The only reason I'm not giving it 5 is because they do spend a lot of time with Domino ramping up to super speed. And I think that maybe it needed a couple more words on the page, but it's almost perfect, which is pretty much all that you can hope for from something made by actual human beings. So Motor Crush is awesome. The end of this first arc is awesome. If you've been holding off on reading it, now the whole first arc is out. So there's no excuse. Go read it right now. It's amazing. Yeah.
It's out this week from Image Comics. So go check it out at your LCS. Also out this week from Dynamite Entertainment is Nancy Drew and the Hardy Boys, The Big Lie Number 2. I was super excited about the first issue of this because it does take everything that you remember from those mystery teenage things from your kid and kind of makes it, it definitely makes it modern and also makes it maybe a little bit more realistic where you have the Hardy Boys' father has been murdered. They are suspects. We find out in this issue is more Nancy Drew focused and how she got involved in this case and how she knows that the Hardy Boys are not behind their father's murder. But we discover that she has gotten the brothers to play along and pretend like they may be suspects in order to lure the real bad guys out. The issue ends in a poker match that may end up with people in more hot water than they planned. Maybe Nancy isn't such a great planner as she expects. There's certainly some interpersonal relationship issues between the boys Hardy that need to be addressed as well. But I still thought that this issue was really well written, and I think that it's a solid story that's going to continue, and I can't wait to see how it all plays out. I can't remember if this is a 6-issue series or not, but right now it's still riding high for me. The one thing that I have a bit of a problem with is the Anthony Del Cole art. I'm sorry, the Werther Del Edera art. At times it feels like, what's his name that did Long Halloween?
Jeff Loeb? No,
the artist.
Oh, God.
Tim Sale.
At times, it looks like Tim Sale, but
I love him.
Tim Sale in his way early days when he was still trying to find his form. So there are moments don't like the art, but I can see what it's doing and I can appreciate it and I like it for that. But it's a little bit too loose and a little bit too gangly is probably the best way that I can describe it. Everyone's a little bit too thin. But it works. It works really well. I'm kind of hoping for some darker tones in the color, but hey, at least it doesn't have those high contrast blacks that I hate in all the other Dynamite Entertainment books. If you're looking for a mystery, then definitely go out and grab issue number 1. And then on a Wednesday, April 12th, make sure again you head to your LCS and grab Nancy Drew and the Hardy Boys, The Big Lie Number 2. I'm also giving it 4.5 slices of meatloaf.
So we're ratings twins.
There you go. We're like the Bobbsey twins, who also get another name drop this week in the Nancy Drew and the Hardy Boys.
I like those books.
Both of our books, Ashley, are $3.99 books. But Alternate Comics...
Well, they're independent, so...
Well, that's true. But Alternate Comics is also an independent comic publisher. And they are returning to the age of newspaper print. And so, Rodrigo, Lilith Dark number 1 comes out in May, I think, in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
But because it's in the newsprint form, it's only $1.50 for the cover price.
That's right. And so, unfortunately, I can't speak to the feel and or quality of the newsprint because I did get this comic digitally from Alterna as a review copy.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they're going back to that. And actually, a whole slew of comics are coming out, and they're all in newsprint with a glossy cover.
Yeah, so and I, like if covers. I remember, too, and you may address this here, but the books that are coming out in this newsprint are limited color or black and white.
Yeah, this one's in color, but I don't know. It might have a more conservative palette because of it, although I would say this is color.
Okay.
Especially because the copy that they sent us has the ads, and the ads seem to be in full color.
Cool.
Although that might be different. I don't know. I don't know how this works. But yes, let's talk about Lilith Dark, number one. I did not expect when I saw Lilith Dark and then a link to open this up and see a picture of like a 5-year-old girl riding a Tyrannosaurus. I was just very conditioned by the 90s to expect something very different when you hear a name like Lilith Dark.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. But hey, but dinosaurs.
I am glad that it's this. I am glad that it turned out to be this instead. In fact, I was going to review a different Alterna comic, and I was like, what could this be? And I clicked on it, and now this is the one I'm doing because I'm much more interested in this. So Lilith Dark is the story of a very little girl who has a big imagination and ends up getting involved with fantastical things that exist outside of her imagination. So basically she likes to play pretend a lot and gets really into it, but now she gets tied up with like actual beasties, as she calls them. It's all very charming because she's very young and spends a lot of the comic talking to herself.
Mm-hmm.
So she says things like, beasties are so predictable, always living in caves, you know, just misspelling things and things like, the beasties have destroyed the villagers' farms, stole their crops, eaten all their cakes, and things like that.
Aww.
It's really charming. And I guess my main complaint about it is that you see into her imagination. So when she's playing pretend, you see these things happen as though they were happening on panel, right? A classic way of handling things in comics. And then actual magical things start happening. And it makes it... There doesn't seem to be a difference. So if it turns out that there is no connection between her subconscious and what's actually happening, it's going to be a little disappointing for me because there's no visual difference in, you know, real magic and the stuff that she's imagining. So, I mean, this is the first issue. They're establishing, they have a lot of stuff to establish, so I'm not holding them to that too badly. The art is cool. It's really cute. The weird monsters are weird. The cute girl is cute. It basically gives you everything that you would hope for. It does have this very muted palette. It's like largely in purples with like maybe a few red accents here and there. It's interesting. It's an interesting looking book. And it's an interesting concept for a book. I'm just curious to see where the division is, whether things are connected or not, or if this is just a case of like everything just kind of looking the same and the artist and the writer not really coming up with a distinct way of separating these things. I don't know. It might be that they do have it and I just haven't noticed it. I'm not sure. But it's a good book. I enjoyed it. I'll give it 3 slices of meatloaf. Again, can't speak to the newsprint part, but at least the digital version of it looks really good.
Yeah, and I mean, for $1.50, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I mean, you can't beat that.
I mean, when was the last time we had a comic that came out for $1.50?
I was going to say, I would like kill for a comics to be $1.50.
I remember when comics were $1.50, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, so do I. That's what I was saying, but it was like 1990 or something.
Probably earlier than that. By 90, you would have been up to $1.99 for some of your books.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Interesting. I long for the days of 75-cent cover prices.
They were 60 cents, Ashley. 60 cents was what a comic cost when I walked into the store.
I have never been able to purchase anything for 60 cents that wasn't like some stale-ass candy from 7-Eleven.
Yeah, buy it before we have to throw it out.
When I was a boy, you could go with $5 and you could buy every comic on the stands. Because there were only 10 freaking comics to have.
I've told the story before where I could take $30 in lawnmower money, fill up my truck with gas, drive to Topeka, go and buy a stack of comics, go to McDonald's, get some, like a drink, fries, and a hamburger or two, and drive home and still have plenty of money left over to do it again the next week.
Yeah, but we never believe you when you tell that story.
It's true. It's true. That's how I got my comic books. Now I would get.
There's no grass in Kansas.
Oh, you are just so full of it. Matthew,
how
about you?
I live on the side of the state with water and there's no grass.
Oh, hey, I can take you outside to our yard right now. It's beautiful and green and lush. And the hills are alive with grass. It looks wonderful. This is the time of year that I get really excited about nature, because everything is coming back to life and starting to bloom and look wonderful. And I just like today I was out walking and it's like, you can smell the lilacs. And what are those trees that smell really good?
Poison oak.
One of those. And then you can smell the tulips, all that stuff in the air, and it smells so good. And then you realize, oh, it's springtime and they're cleaning out the manure sheds over at the research station south of town. So there's a hint of manure mixed in with that. But springtime. I love it.
A hint of eau de cow. Now, I want you to know I was joking about the grass thing, but I lived in Hayes for 14 years and there are no friggin' hills.
This week, once again, you need to get out a little bit more.
From Marvel Comics. It's a Marvel comic. No, go ahead, finish.
No, I just said you need to get out more.
I get out all the time. Marvel Comics. It was out last week, actually, for Marvel Comics. And it is, who's the villain from Mean Girls? What's her name? Regina?
Regina George.
Regina George. I believe that the Inhumans, for me, are best explained by Regina George saying, stop trying to make Fetch happen. But it has something on the cover that immediately makes me pick up a comic. There are actually two things that you can find on a cover these days that will make a pick up a comic. One of them is the name Steve Orlando. The other is the name Al Ewing. Al Ewing, of course, recently been writing, I think, U.S. Avengers for Marvel. Well, I do like Lockjaw. Lockjaw is okay, but he's not on the cover. And also, the Inhumans have been mixed for me ever since, pretty much ever since Black Bolt accidentally killed Richard Rider Nova back in the Thanos Imperative or whatever that was. But Royals number one is set up as a big new jumping on point for the Inhumans. And the very first page of the book introduces us to our cast, which is great because it has big headshots and it tells you a little bit about each character. And it also tells you the problem that you're going to have with this book if you're Matthew, because it contains four of the traditional Inhumans. There's Black Bolt, real name Blackagar Boltagon. Medusa, whose real name is Meduthalith Amakalin, and her little sister Crystal, whose name is Crystalith Amakalin. And of course, Gorgon, who Rodrigo tells me is named Gordon Gonzalez.
Right. Stands to reason.
Right. Makes perfect sense. And then the three new Inhumans, or two new Inhumans, Flint and Swain, who are named as X-Men. And of course, Novar, the Marvel boy from the world of the Kree, is in this. And I'm kind of happy with that. So all of this, I'm saying to myself, all right, the naming thing is a problem. They're still treating the Inhuman thing wrong for me. But we start in the far future with the last Inhuman. And we don't know who the last Inhuman is. It's an old person in a robe, so it could be anybody.
And then there's a record scratch, and the person's like, probably wondering how I got here.
Well, if that person is who I think it is, he probably didn't say anything for fear of destroying the Eastern Hemisphere. But cutting back in time, cutting back in time to the modern day, we find that Medusa, the queen of the Inhumans, has given up her throne. Because all that mess that we've been seeing with the Terrigen Mist being released and creating all these new Inhumans and making poison for the mutants. The mutants are coming back. I don't know if you guys heard. I had planned to review X-Men Gold number one this week.
Yeah.
That didn't happen. That's not going to happen. But
I was going to say, I can give you some advice on whether or not to review that.
I read it. And that just, okay. So Royals number one has this stuff in it where we're seeing the Inhumans kind of on the downside of the Inhumans versus X-Men part. And they decide that they have to figure out the secret. And Marvel Boy shows up and says, dude, I'm a Kree from another dimension. And I totally know the secret of the Inhumans, you guys, and we have to go into space, you guys. So four of the royal family, Marvel Boy and Swain and Flint, get a spaceship and go to space. Now, the great part about this is Al Ewing's plotting and the dialogue. The dialogue is excellent. I like the interactions, and we get little vignettes of each of the Inhumans planning to leave Earth. We see, you know, Swain says goodbye to her girlfriend and Flint says goodbye to his girlfriend. And Crystal is like, okay, my 8-year-old child, I'm totally abandoning you now. Uncle Karnak will take care of you. And I'm like, God, isn't it bad enough that her father is Quicksilver? You've got half douche genes and you're just going to abandon her, but that's neither here nor there. And then the issue kind of goes off the rails for me. It's got a great last page scary reveal, but it's almost, I don't know, it's almost too much. It's like over the top. It's when someone comes at you and screams the punchline to a joke that you didn't really want to hear.
Shut up, Stephen. Don't mock my jokes.
And I'm not going to ask you what happens if a donkey eats a rooster, but Al Ewing does a wonderful job in making me care about the Inhumans and the Royals, even though he keeps sticking that damnable Lord song in my head with this title. I'm not 100% sold on the art. John Boy Myers handles the art, and it's that uncontrolled is probably the best way I can describe it. It's somewhere between a Kenneth Rocafor and maybe an Umberto Ramos, but it's never quite either. And it feels like it's back and forth between those two very divergent extremes, which makes for some interesting panels, but the storytelling doesn't quite jibe for me. And even those interesting panels don't feel like they're consistently interesting. Although Medusa does get an awesome new costume with a Jean Grey face shield thing from the 90s. You know how Jean Grey had that thing across her cheeks. She didn't want to get a sunburn. But the overall effect of this was just kind of off-putting. And I don't know really how to describe it other than their... All right, I can describe it. And it goes like this. New 52 Aquaman number one starts with a long and involved sequence where they tell us all the jokes about Aquaman and why he's bad and have Aquaman in character respond to those jokes and say, I don't talk to fish. It's that. They're trying so hard to overcome your negative expectations of the book that the really fun parts of this story, the parts that you want to like, are kind of muted by the fact that they're reminding you by going, so I know the Inhumans kind of suck, you guys, but here's why they're going to be fun. And Ewing is a good writer. I like Ewing, and I'll probably check out the next issue of Inhumans and see what, you know, what the deal is and what the secret of the thing is and whether somebody is actually dying horribly. But I can't really say that I love this book or would necessarily recommend it. I'm going to go with two slices of meatloaf. It's got potential, There's a lot of stuff in it that could go somewhere awesome. And, you know, the spaceship looks like the Micronauts battle cruiser, so you can't hate that. But just didn't quite gel for me.
Okay. That's okay. Not every comic book has to be a winner.
Yeah, and they may not be for me. Not all books are for me.
Yep.
Even though I am a middle-aged, fat, white guy with too much, disposable income, so maybe more of the comic books than need to be are, in fact, for me. So, you know, what are you going
to
do?
All right. Listeners, head over to MajorSpoilers.com. Check out a lot of reviews and other things. While you're over there, click on that Amazon.com link. You may be interested in some of the things that we talk about. You may want to go track them down, or maybe you need a new computer. Just click on that Amazon link and buy and shop as you normally would at Amazon. But the good news is a little bit comes back our way and allows us to keep the lights on for, you know, a few more hours. And we certainly appreciate it. One person is like, I guess, the computer supplier for his company. And he has made that Major Spoilers Amazon page his bookmark page. And so every time he needs to order something for the company, he just goes through that Amazon link and we get some cool stuff. Another person reached out and said, hey, I finally bought a Cintiq tablet and loving it. And I use the Major Spoilers link. And I'm like, thank you. And then there's some people that are like, hey, I bought new batteries for my Game Boy. And I'm like, cool. So every little bit helps. And go over there to Amazon and check it out. But do it through the MajorSpoilers.com website. And then once you're done shopping at Amazon, make sure you get back to Major Spoilers and take the Major Spoilers poll of the week.
Poll of the week.
I don't know about you guys, but we record this show on Tuesday. And ever since that Lego movie, the boys have figured out that Tuesday should be Taco Tuesday.
On a Friday.
On a Monday, on a Wednesday, whatever day of the week. Unfortunately, we just cannot run down to the taco trucks that are on every corner. But we do get into the question of what kind of taco do you want? Young boy, other young boy, young wife. What kind of tacos do you want? Do you want a hard taco? Do you want a soft taco? Or do you want one of those weird tacos that's like the combo taco? Some people call it. That's where you have the soft taco inside of a hard shell. A hard shell inside of a soft shell with like beans in the middle. Here they call it a funny taco. I think at Taco Bell they call it a double-decker cut taco. Matthew, what kind of taco is your favorite kind of taco shell?
Well, this is a difficult one for me because I don't generally eat tacos. Well, what we refer to, and you know, we had a long discussion about this a couple of years ago on this very show. What we refer to in Kansas as a taco may or may not be, but the components thereof of the traditional or untraditional Mexican food that you get in central Kansas, I prefer as nachos. So if
well,
I have
the
an
question
option,
is, what is your favorite taco shell?
Right, and that's what I'm saying. My favorite taco shell is a nacho, but that's not an option here.
Right.
And I looked at it and I'm like,
and neither is a burrito.
It's difficult because my house, I always have the tortillas, the low carb tortillas around, mostly for the kid and the fact that all the grown women in the house are now trying to lose weight and dieting. So I'll use that and I'll dip stuff into it. But there is something just immensely gratifying about going to Taco Bell when you're finally in that taco mood. And getting that Taco Bell, you call it a hard taco shell, but the slurg that they put in it makes it more of a squishy with crunchy at the top, because that's not food. Yeah, I don't know what that slurg is, but it is not entirely food, and
it's
I'm really sort
meat.
Of fine with that. Well, you know, so it fits with our high school report.
Or whatever they say, what is the ingredients list says, mostly meat or something?
I believe it's actually meat, and they said there was a lot of oats in it, which is probably healthier.
Kind of like Subway's chicken.
I said if I have to go taco, I'm going with, you know, the taco that you could get in the Midwest. I'm going to go with the hard shell because I like that little bit of crunch that reminds me of the nachos that I love.
I can totally
see that. And also, you know, if you go to our local Taco Bell, you can get like 12 tacos for $8 or something.
Oh, yeah.
Which does bring into question the provenance of said tacos, but it's also, I have $8 and I'm going to feed the whole family. So, you know, you don't worry about whether it's actually penguin meat.
Penguin meat is good to eat. Rodrigo, what did you vote for?
I voted for the only answer, which is soft. because Ashley, I don't think you've been present for our previous conversations for this. I'll apologize in advance for anything I may say following this. There's no such thing as a hard taco, right? It's like saying, what's Steven, what's your favorite kind of boat? A yacht or a Volkswagen Beetle? And then and then you say, but Rodrigo, a Volkswagen Beetle is not a boat, it's a car. And I'm like, no. They get you from point A to point B, and they're largely made of metal, you know, boats. A hard taco is something else, because a taco is a soft tortilla with really whatever you want on the inside. Mm-hmm. The contents are not the issue. The only thing that defines a taco is actually the structure of it. Just like if you're like, what's your favorite sandwich? Is it soup? You know, nobody will ask you that either.
They might.
But here's the thing. Here's the important thing. Tacos have become an important part of the American diet, and societies and trends are always changing. So I've become less of a, let's say, huge bastard about yelling at people about their tacos. So I understand that people want to go to Taco Bell and get a hard shell taco, and I usually don't get in their face about it. But since we're talking about it, I'll take this as a way to vent out my ongoing frustration with things.
So, ladies and gentlemen, that is Rodrigo being less of a bastard about tacos.
That I am. If you go back and listen to previous episodes of the Major Spoilers podcast, you will note I have softened the way that a hard, quote unquote, taco softens at the bottom, as Matthew described.
Yeah.
That's basically what's happened to me after living in the U.S. for so long. I've even had things where it's like a soft tortilla with like chicken tenders in it, and then like ranch dressing on it.
Yeah, somebody yeah, McDonald's sells.
Yeah, and it's like, what is this?
Yeah,
but I guess I can appreciate it from a standpoint of like, it's kind of like somebody trying to reverse engineer a taco. It's like somebody is like, hey, Mexican people, what's in a taco? It's like, oh, a taco is like you get a tortilla and then you get like the most delicious stuff and put them in it. And then you wrap it up and you eat it. And they're like, that sounds great. What do we Americans love? It's like chicken tenders pizza. And ranch dressing.
Pizza in a tortilla. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, it's like a breakfast burrito, right? It's just like eggs and cheese. It's like, who doesn't love that?
Throw some bacon in there. This is important, Ashley. I walked into this question afraid of Rodrigo's response.
You don't have to be afraid of Rodrigo's response. You knew it.
No, this is one of the few times that I've ever been in a conversation and had, you know, done my thing and go like, dur, 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 and had Rodrigo go, no, you are wrong. And I'm like,
Matthew,
that's my deal.
Yeah, if you've listened to it before, you could really hear Matthew dancing around this one. And I appreciate that. Matthew and I have been friends for a long time. He knows that this is a subject that I actually get a little incensed about. Yeah, so I appreciate your tact. It's
equivalent of people mocking Matter Eater Lad in a list of 10. Yeah. Oh, who's the stupidest superhero ever?
Ashley, what is your favorite taco shell?
So this is the part where I think I should apologize to Rodrigo before I start talking. So I'm sorry. Here's some things about Ashley. I don't know if I ever met a real life, either Latino or Hispanic person before I moved to the United States. The food has not permeated Canadian culture. And I've never been in a Taco Bell except to use the bathroom, and they all smell like vomit. So I will never eat from a Taco Bell. So my idea of a taco is like the hard shelled things that come in a box wrapped in plastic with overcooked ground beef and cheese in it. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if I ate a burrito until I moved to the United States. Like it is not a thing. And then, you know, in my experience, like soft shell taco was not a thing. That's a tortilla and you put peanut butter and jam inside it and take it to school for lunch. Like, so I don't like, I'm kind of in the Matthew camp. Like everything that I want to eat that's traditionally considered a taco, like I'd just rather eat as a nacho and be super white and gross while I'm doing it.
Sure.
But since
you
got to
steer into that particular skid is what you're
right.
saying.
It's like when you're eating like not refried beans, but like, you know, like cowboy beans. Like it's the whitest you're going to be as you're enjoying them and you've made them from a can. But since this is the poll of the week and there is a fictional gun to my head forcing me to choose, I guess since soft tacos don't exist in my brain, but are the only correct answer, I'll have to go with hard tacos and face the wrath of Rodrigo.
Like I said, I try not to get in people's faces about it anymore. I'm sure
the anymore is what makes it funny.
I'm sure if any of my high school friends are listening, they would be like, "Oh man, did you guys get off easy?"
If you want to see
week, qu'est-ce que c'est favorite poutine?
If you want to see the saddest face, Rodrigo. The youngest, the sidekick, who's almost six now.
Watch him. Where does the time go?
I know, right? Cats in the Cradle and all that stuff. If you want to see the saddest, if you want to see the saddest thing in the world, watch the sidekick try to eat a hard shell taco. Because he tries to. First of all, he squeezes it from the top because you know apparently taco the it's supposed to touch if it's a taco, right?
Oh my God, that's so funny.
And so he squeezes it at the top, and I would say 20% of the time it results in the taco shell shattering and everything falling on the plate and then him just getting frustrated and mad and starts yelling and screaming. The other part of the time is he knows that you're supposed to eat the part that's pointing towards you first. So he basically eats a taco, not quite sideways, but kind of upside down. And so he's eating the taco from the bottom. And everything is still falling out on his plate. And so one day one thing that's interesting about the Taco Bell is they put all their tacos now in like this sleeve.
Yeah.
And so now all we have to do is just say, "Hey, look, just pull this out a little bit and just eat this part until you get to the cardboard and then pull the rest of it out and then eat some more." So he's kind of gotten tacos figured out at this point. Yeah, but
that sleeve saves your life.
Oh yeah, it does. But I will agree with Rodrigo that the best taco shell is the soft taco shell. I love a warm tortilla with some good meat or a steak inside with your little salsas or whatever on top. Oh, I love that. And so for me, it is the soft taco shell. Now, I will say that I wanted to try because when Matthew and I were going to college, there's this place called Taco Shop.
Yeah, right.
That's been around since literally when we were born.
Come on branding. Down to the taco shop.
And they have something called the Funny Taco. And that was when I was first introduced to it in college because it was a hard taco inside of a soft tortilla shell, which I guess Rodrigo would technically be a taco for Rodrigo, with like a layer of refried beans in between. Right. And I, for some reason, I remember liking it when I was in college. And so I decided to try it the other day. It's called a double decker, I guess, at Taco Bell. No, I'm never going to eat a funny taco ever again. It's only going to be soft taco shells because that thing was nasty.
Oh.
Somehow.
Well, it depends on, you know, how good your shells are, too.
No, somehow the grossness of the wet hard shell permeated into the soft taco shell, into the tortilla.
That's a bad corn tortilla is what that is.
And it kind of felt like somebody urinated all over it.
Oh man.
Yeah. And I was like, I'm sorry, I can't eat this.
To go there?
Well, you know, when you pick up something that the cat has done its business on and then you're like, what is this?
I don't know that. My cat uses a box.
People who've listened to Critical Hit know the problems that I've had with cats over the last couple of weeks.
I meant someone else's cat who lives in
the house. Oh, no, it's your cat. Oh,
you love that cat.
Matthew loves his cat. Mr. Dots, Matthew loves you.
He is a mop. He's
Kirby, Matthew loves you. He loves you. He loves you, Matthew.
So many revelations in this poll of the week.
Bad cat.
Speaking of the poll of the week, how has everyone voted so far this week? It's pretty short. The poll went up late because of some site things that were going on. But what do we have so far?
Well, interestingly, I expected this to be entirely the reverse of what we see. 55%. Saying soft tacos are the way to go.
Well, they didn't want to suffer Rodrigo's wrath.
They probably didn't. Everyone's in fear. 31% saying hard taco, 19 or 14 or whatever that number is. I'm going to say 14%.
Okay.
Saying the combo or the funny or the double decker. I feel like when you have like both shells, it's too much bread.
Yeah.
It's like that point where you know what I really want? I want a sandwich with rye bread. And then on top of that, I want wheat bread.
It's like It's like the turducken of Taco Bell tacos.
There's only one place that you can get away with external bread, and that place is in the middle of a Big Mac. And
it's like
limited.
Like a club sandwich, except the middle is like pumpernickel. Yeah, and it's like a different kind of bread.
Just wrong.
If you can't want
mix
to.
You can't mix corn and flour tortillas. My engines can't take the strain.
There's probably another reason.
To show the focus of the poll that it didn't even separate corn and flour tortillas.
No, I didn't even do that. No. It's probably a good thing that people aren't responding that much in the comment section about why they are, because I can just see Rodrigo pulling a Jay and Silent Bob at the end of Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. Is that it?
Excuse me. Are you Magnolia Fan 309?
Are you the one that said you like hard taco shells?
Here's a hard taco. Boosh.
Listeners, head over to majorspoilers.com, cast your vote in the Major Spoilers poll of the week, and maybe you will get a special message from Rodrigo direct to you. You won't know unless you try.
31% of us are getting a message that's just a middle finger.
Wait a minute. Oh, hey, speaking of middle fingers, tax time is here.
Nice.
No, tax time is months and months past because responsible people do their taxes before.
Quiet, Ashley.
I burned through my meager refund, and now I'm back to the point where I hope my MP3s come through.
Here's the weird thing. Every year, by the time you guys get your send you 1099s.
If you send me an MP3 and an MI6 and an FX10.
I send you guys my 1099s. I've got everything done for taxes, which is like the end of January, right? I think is when it's supposed to go to. And so I have everything ready, and we take it to our accountant. And this year we've got a new accountant, and I have to sit around and explain to them what podcasting is, how websites make money, what new media is, why I'm getting 14 different things from different companies worth tens of thousands of dollars kind of things. And so every year I have to sit down and do this. And I think if you are someone who wants to make a lot of money right now, you should be an accountant for new media personalities. And so what I mean by that is you need to understand what podcasting is. Yeah, you need to specialize. And I think you can make a lot of money if you specialize and understand what and how people like us operate. And Ashley, I'm sure you're even more problematic. Well, maybe you just file everything yourself, but try to explain that you're an actor and web personality and all this stuff.
Make all that go away.
Well, that's what I do too, because it is kind of crazy, especially when we say, hey, we've got new equipment that we had to do and all this other stuff. But still, we'll submit stuff in February, and it is literally, what is today? The 11th. It is April 10th, and we're getting a message from our accountant saying, okay, I think we have it all done. Come in so we can talk about it, because I have a lot of questions. And so I'll go in and spend 2 or 3 hours talking with them again. And then next day he's like, hey, I think we got everything figured out. How about you sign this? And then you can cut me a check and you can cut the government a check.
Yeah, I'm not even the proprietor of a website like Steven is. And that's basically my experience. I go to a popular franchise tax place and have an appointment with one person. And by the end of my session, which usually lasts several hours, every tax professional in that building is huddled around a computer because they just don't understand. Like right now I have income coming in from my book. I have income coming in from Major Spoilers plus my job, plus random other things that I managed to, get money from. And the concept that I'm not just a person with one job that has always lived in the same state is just like impossible. Last year, getting everything through from Kansas was just such a pain in the butt.
I've stopped putting podcaster down as occupation and just like, I'm a writer. I'm a writer.
Yep. Yeah.
And that is exactly what I've been doing ever since this. They're like, what are you? I'm a writer. Oh, so this is writing. It's writing income. Yeah, it's fine.
I've had to file taxes in two different countries before.
Ugh, that's going to be annoying.
because when I closed down my Canadian bank accounts, that's considered income, even though it was just like $300 that had been sitting in that account since I was 20 and moved to the US, like that you still have to declare. And then every year I went to school in the United States, I had to fill out a thing that was like, I'm not working, blah, blah, blah. That also went on my mom's taxes, and I got audited 3 years in a row in Canada based on that as well.
Oh boy. God, wow, that's
I
awful.
Feel weird.
If only there was if there was only some place we could go to find out simple explanations to complex tax questions. Like, what is tax reform?
High school?
Well, some places don't even do that. It's really amazing. And as we were coming up to the 15th, or what is it, the 17th or 18th that they're due this year?
It's the 18th this year, because the 15th falls on a Saturday.
Saturday, yeah. I thought to myself, you know, there's a comic for everything. I wonder if there's a comic that explains the American tax system. And sure enough, there is. It's called Blood from a Stone, a cartoon guide to tax reform that came out in 1977. That, as I was reading this, I was amazed at how much of the things that are discussed in this comic, this supplement, whatever it is, are still super relevant today, with people still asking the exact same questions and the exact same debates and all of this still going on 40 years later. It was an eye-opening experience. So it's called Blood from a Stone, a cartoon guide to tax reform. And it's basically would you say it's a propaganda piece? Because it's really trying to get people to go out and support what the government's trying to do.
I think by strictest definition, for sure.
Well, this is from 1976.
Yeah.
Which is remarkable because, you know, that's like 40 years ago. But it's all the same argument. It's all the same things. It's all the same robber barons taking advantage of the tax loopholes, which
there's a whole chapter just talking about tax loopholes.
Yep.
What'd you guys think of this, Ashley? What'd you think of this comics? Like 48 pages.
I really thought that high school should have taught me more about taxes than it did,
I agree with you.
I have a whole theory about how there should be like life skill classes, like how to use a hammer.
Yes.
It's stuff like that.
I had a long discussion the other night with someone who works at our local university. And I was saying, look, you guys really need to rework the gen ed program, and you need to actually include classes and skills that people are going to need, like basic financial planning and physical education and, you know, cooking skills. And
Jason told me once that you could like buy a house with no money. Like you can just like go to the bank and then they'll like ruin your life because you owe them so much in taxes or inflation or whatever. Not inflation. That's the wrong word. But like interest. Thank you. I didn't know that. And that kind of blew my mind. And luckily I didn't go out into buying frenzy and purchase a house with no money. But, you know, that would have been good to know.
Well, you should watch that other movie. What was the one that came out just last year with that was talking about the housing bubble? That's what was happening. That's what was happening.
People were homes.
People were going out and buying houses for no money at super high interest rates, and that's why we had the implosion in the 2000s.
Yeah. But to the comic, I think the comic is like really clever, a lot smarter than me, and difficult to understand.
Yeah. That's the one thing that I was really surprised. I was like, oh, they're gonna explain this in like super simple concepts, because it's like super simple art, not really a lot of word balloony type stuff. But, you know, hey, we're talking about the tax loophole, and here's a picture of a noose, and that's, you know, that's your art for that page. And yet you're right, there are parts in it when, especially when they try to explain how the reform is supposed to work and why it's important, that is just kind of like, wow, this is a lot of gobbledygook that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me either.
Really?
No, it makes sense,
the tax code is kind of deliberately Byzantine. So, this comic tries its best, I think, to clear it up. But, I mean, there are parts of it that are specifically supposed to be difficult to follow, or that, like, these are laws that deliberately misdirect you as you're reading them a lot of the time, this law is for this. And when you get into the nitty gritty of it, it's like, but actually the people that benefit are these guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, here's a tax code that was specifically written so Louis B. Mayer could make $2 million more when he retired than the rest of yous.
Yeah, yous guys. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. What'd you think of this, Matthew?
I love this guy's work. Larry Gonick is the guy behind the Cartoon History of the Universe.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm familiar with his work. I feel weird because I've never had the thing where, oh my God, taxes are weird. Now, granted, I've never had more than like six jobs in a year. So it's not like I'm, you know, a writer doing a whole bunch of work. Well, and you know, I'm old and I'm boring, and I've always been old and boring, but I grab my B-52s and my 36Ds and my 595s and I put them all together and I do the thing online. Well, since they've had it, I used to do it on paper, but I read this book and I was like, yeah, this is fascinating. This all makes perfect sense to me. This is like, oh my God, I'm so mad at the people in charge. And of course, you know, they're talking in America about sweeping tax reform.
Mm-hmm.
And this, you know, this book really points out that this has been happening for over four decades. The entirety of my life,
right,
schmucks have been talking about sweeping tax reform, mm-hmm, and it just doesn't happen, and it never happens.
And they do a
fascinating to read about that.
They do a good job in trying to explain why closing the loopholes is maybe not such a great idea, and what would happen if they did close all the loopholes. So it's a fascinating book, and the best part about it is that it is completely free. You can just, I'll put a link there in the show notes, but you can go get it. It's completely free. The Tax Justice blog site has been given permission to post this. And I just find it incredibly fascinating. Rodrigo, what were your thoughts on this thing?
I thought it was really interesting. Really, the thesis of it is that people... taxes and the tax code tend to benefit the people that have the most money while really squeezing the people that have the least money.
Right.
That is something that I already knew.
Right.
So
right.
I wasn't like flabbergasted by that. That's I knew that. Uh-huh. What was really interesting was a lot of the history aspect of it.
Right.
Especially once they actually get into American taxes. For example, I didn't know that a way to, like, one of the ways to relieve this was income tax. It's like, mm-hmm, income tax is kind of the bane of our existence. That's exactly what we were just complaining about, right? And income tax was itself, apparently, according to this book, a way to alleviate the fact that everybody was basically paying for these tariffs, and you know, it made things unattainable, so they switched to income tax to basically force rich people to pay something to the government.
Yeah.
And it only kind of worked, or it worked for a while, and then things started going downhill once everybody kind of learned the system. They started exploiting it again.
Mm-hmm. And I like that there's a nice big explanation that, hey, you know, you didn't really have income tax, or you didn't have a federal tax until the Civil War, when they had to fund the war. And then as soon as the war was over, they abolished the tax. And then all the extra money they had laying around, they just gave it back to everybody and said, well, here you go. We don't need this money. And then how they did it again for World War One, and then World War Two, and then how they would raise it during the wartime and then lower it after that. But
all the way back.
Oh, yeah. And then no, never all the way back. But then also go in and say, hey, maybe we should take some of this money and put it to education, and take some of this money and put it to highway systems, or take some of this money and put it to the interior, you know, whatever else. And then you look at this and compare to today. And again, it's the same argument. And it's a fascinating document that just proves that what goes around comes around, and we're all stuck in this grand circle of life.
Right. I really wanted to, and neglected to, because I was writing and jumping and editing and stuff, do the translation of 1976 money into modern numbers. Because at one point they're talking about tax loopholes essentially are an expenditure for the government of $125 billion 1976 dollars. And if my translation rates are correct, that's like 17 scrabillion dollars. That's more money than in the entire universe in 2017 money, which is ridiculously. Well,
when they talk about the national, what was it, the national budget, where it was $315 billion, I'm like, holy cow, that is kind of the way they've done it today. And I was thinking, this has to be trillions of dollars in today's money.
Ugh, yeah,
that's scary. Well,
that's so many dollars.
This is the thing, though. Money is a shared delusion. Money does not exist. We just agree that it does.
Well, we don't even, I would argue that we have moved away from a true monetary system, and we are really into a credit system where, Matthew, you work for so many hours a week, and your bank account is reflected a number of credits based on your work. And then instead of going using real money to buy that taco, you go and use a piece of plastic that deducts those credits and moves them from your bank, your account, to someone else's account. We've really moved towards a moneyless system, but I'm one of those people that still has to use some green to get around.
You got gold in your freezer, like on S-Town?
I won't tell you where my gold is buried, but yes, I do have gold.
And it's under a flag in his backyard.
No, it's not under a flag, I can tell you. But no, I have invested in and make sure that I have some hard currency in case I need to flee to Canada and live life there as a robber baron.
Justin Trudeau.
I wonder if I can be a robber baron of Canada.
No,
there's a lot of land. So
in the central part of Canada, somewhere.
You can't be a robber baron in Canada. You have to be polite.
Like 90% of the Canadian population lives within 100 kilometers of the American border. So like if you go up north, you can pretty much build a castle and declare yourself the king and no one's going to argue with you.
There was a time in the early 2000s where my friend Dave and I were literally specking out housing prices in Canada, and based on what we were paying in California prices, it's like, oh crap, we could literally buy a castle in Canada for those prices. Now, I'm sure the price has changed.
that's kind of true in Kansas. Like, depending on where you go in Kansas, they just have straight up free land.
Oh, yeah. Far western Kansas is like, hey, we'll give you the land.
You don't want it.
Well, some people might. Some people may like that very isolated lifestyle.
They all live in Alaska.
Yes, those people do, where I guess when you show up in Alaska, they just give you money and say, go have fun.
Well, they do, because then you're not allowed to basically speak out against them destroying the natural beauty of the state. Right.
And
you're not allowed to say anything bad about the mama grizzly either.
I don't know how many states do not have an income tax. I know, isn't it Nevada does not have a state income
tax? Texas supposedly does not.
Florida?
Texas? Florida?
Yeah, I want to say there's fewer than a dozen, but I may be full of crap.
Well, there you go. That's what we know about taxes, ladies and gentlemen.
7 U.S. states currently don't have an income tax: Alaska, Florida, Nevada, South Dakota, Texas, Washington, and Wyoming.
There you go. And there's only like 19 people in Wyoming, so there wouldn't really be any money to have there.
Oh, man. Man, oh, man. All right, so what's the bottom line on Blood from a Stone, a cartoon guide to tax reform?
I felt like it was a little didactic, but fun. And I think the only real weakness about it is the same weakness that I have with a lot of Gonick's work, is you get to a point where there's this fascinating stuff going on and there's a whole lot of letters and words and numbers on the page. And there's a cute little drawing in the corner, like a Sergio Aragonés drawing of some guy going, yep, I hope my congressman can read. And I'm like, man, I don't want that. I want to read more about the stuff going on over here. But
yeah,
that may be just my complaint, too.
Rodrigo, what are your final thoughts on this?
This is a good read. If you don't know how the tax code works, this is a very good superficial, like, here are the basics of it. And so on the one hand, that's a good read. It's a terrible read because you can get very depressed realizing that the same stuff that we're talking about now, we've been talking about since at least the 70s. If not before. So if you're like, yeah, I'm sure we'll get sweeping tax reform sometime soon, it can be a little bit disheartening.
Yeah. Ashley?
I think this would be a really great thing to pick up if you are into cartooning or political cartooning. It's not as vitriolic as what you would expect and probably get from a lot of others in that genre, but I think it does the same thing with a better focus on informing. And then, go watch like West Wing or When We Rise and get super depressed about all the social issues that we haven't progressed on since 20 plus years ago either.
I am very tempted to print this out and have my oldest read this. He's been doing a lot of things in his advanced class with the stock market. He's playing that stock market game and doing quite well in it. And so the other day we were talking about futures and how you set things aside and how that applies to your taxes. And he kind of started to understand it. But I kind of want to just give him this blood from a stone and say, here, read this and see what you think about taxes after you're done reading it. And then he'll probably go, who is Carter? I think will probably be the first question out of his mouth. But definitely something worth checking out. And like I said, there is a link in the show notes over at majorspoilers.com where you can download this for free. It's an 8 megabyte PDF. And like I said, it's about 40 pages or so, and it's all annotated with bibliography and all that stuff. So if you're into that part, you can even dive deeper into that topic and subject.
Did you clean up the faded pages?
No, I didn't do anything. I just downloaded the comic and read it.
Yeah. I wanted so bad to clean up those pages. So
yeah.
Yeah, they got it for free. They got it from permission from the creators.
I know.
You can go to Amazon and try to find a copy, but it has no description or anything. And it just says, hey, this is the original binding. So, you know, it is literally something from 77. But if you can read this in electronic form for free, I say go check it out. Yeah.
Comics from 1976 are a crapshoot, man.
Yeah. That wraps it up for this issue. Thank you so much for listening and being part of the Major Spoilers experience. We're going to be back next week. And next week, what are we talking about next week? It's not a fifth week next week. Next week, oh, yeah, we're going to be talking about JLA The Nail. Why? Because we're not reading JLA Another Nail. Another The Nail. And also because we know that you love comics and we do too. We will talk with you soon.
Stop talking about comic books or I'll kill you. I don't care if the Hulk could defeat the Man of Steel. I'm gonna rearrange your things if you continue to debate whether Logan's claws could pierce Steve Rogers' shield. I just couldn't care less if they bring back Kraven. Spider-Man's a clone. Stop spending all our cash on back issues of The Flash, or I swear to God you're gonna spend your twilight years alone.
This podcast is copyright 2017 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.